The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we're taking a closer look at something most of us interact with every week, maybe even every day, the blue recycling bin.
A gripe.
If you're like me, you probably spend time rinsing out jars, sorting plastics, feeling like you're doing your bit for the planet.
And it's that feeling, that sense of environmental duty that's really at the heart of our discussion today. We're essentially challenging that core assumption about modern recycling.
So the mission here is to kind of unpack this routine, this system we take for granted, and ask a pretty uncomfortable question, actually.
Has recycling become, well, a sort of comforting illusion, maybe even a moral license that lets us off the hook?
Letting us off the hook from looking at the bigger picture, you mean, like overconsumption and how products are made in the first place.
Exactly. We put a lot of effort, you know, time, tax money, into managing waste. But are these good intentions actually achieving what we think they are?
Or are they maybe masking a deeper problem, a fundamental flaw in our whole take, make, dispose way of doing things?
The material we've synthesized for this deep dive suggests it's not just that the system has flaws, but that the idea of recycling itself might be its most successful, maybe most misleading product.
Okay, that's a strong claim. How are we going to tackle this?
Well, we're drawing on the work of two Scandinavian experts. Interestingly, both named Finn Jurgensen, but they come at it from two really necessary complementary angles.
Right, two Finns. So who are they?
Okay, first there's Finn Jurgensen, the Danish one. He's an industrial ecologist, a professor of sustainable systems. Think of him as the engineer, the systems guy.
The one looking at resource flow, policy, the technical side.
Precisely. He advises governments, corporations. He gives us that pragmatic, boots-on-the-ground view of material science and how things actually work or don't work.
And the second Finn Jurgensen.
That's Finn Arne Jurgensen. He's an environmental historian, a professor of science, technology, and society. His focus is different. It's cultural.
Cultural? How so?
He looks at how recycling transformed, you know, from something practical, like during wartime, into this powerful moral imperative, almost a kind of cultural ritual in wealthy societies today.
Huh. So one gives us the mechanics, the what and how it's failing, and the other gives us the history and psychology, the why we cling to it, maybe?
Exactly. It's that combination that's so powerful. Technical rigor meets deep cultural context, and spoiler alert, they both land in a strikingly similar place.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What's the core argument they're both making then?
Well, it boils down to this. The current system of recycling is fundamentally flawed and, frankly, insufficient. It's acting like symptom management.
Like taking a painkiller for a broken leg instead of setting the bone.
That's a good analogy. It makes us feel a bit better, allows us to maybe feel environmentally conscious, but it doesn't force us to actually address the root cause, which is often overconsumption itself.
The language they use is pretty stark, isn't it? I remember reading that phrase, the blue bin isn't a solution, it's more like psychological relief.
Yes, Finn Jurgensen calls it, very bluntly, a guilt disposal bin.
Wow.
Yeah. The place we put our environmental anxieties so we can keep consuming without feeling too bad.
And the other Finn, the historian.
Finn Arne Jurgensen frames it slightly differently. He sees recycling as like the environmental equivalent of saying please and thank you. It signals politeness, virtue maybe, but doesn't change the underlying economic structures driving the waste.
So we feel good, we perform the ritual, but the real problem isn't our individual failure to recycle more, it's upstream.
Precisely. They argue the problem isn't disposal, it's design. Waste itself is described as a failure of design and imagination.
Okay, that shifts the focus completely from managing trash to preventing it from becoming trash in the first place.
Exactly. It pivots the whole conversation towards what they call the upper R's. You know, refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, remanufacture.
And recycling?
Recycling is positioned way down the list. It's the absolute last resort in this ideal waste hierarchy, not the primary solution we often treat it as.
Okay, let's get into the weeds a bit. The technical reality. This is where I think a lot of the disillusionment comes in for people. You mentioned true recycling versus something else.
Yes, downcycling. This distinction is critical. True, closed-loop recycling is like turning an aluminum can back into another high-quality aluminum can. Great. Value preserved, less mining needed.
That's the ideal we probably all imagine.
Right. But with most plastics, mixed materials.
Right.
What we usually get is downcycling. That high-quality plastic bottle doesn't become another bottle. It gets melted or processed down into something lower grade.
Like what?
Maybe fleece for a jacket, or plastic lumber for a park bench, or carpet backing. Things that themselves usually can't be recycled again.
So it's just delaying the trip to the landfill, not avoiding it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And often, it's not even a very efficient delay. The whole process is plagued by contamination. You know, the greasy pizza box, the wrong type of plastic.
Ah, the contamination problem?
It's huge. And it leads to a harsh economic truth. It's often just cheaper and easier for manufacturers to use brand new virgin materials than to deal with a messy, unpredictable stream of stuff coming from our recycling bins.
So the economics often work against recycling, especially for plastics.
Definitely. And this isn't just a local issue. It became a global one. The authors tracked where scrap materials actually went.
And where did they go?
For decades, wealthy Western countries basically shipped their recycling problem, often low-quality, contaminated bales of plastic and paper overseas, mostly to Asia, especially China.
Outsourcing the messy part.
Right, where environmental regulations and labor costs were lower.
Yeah.
It created this illusion that our systems were working, but it often involved significant environmental and social costs elsewhere.
Until that changed, right? I remember hearing about China's policy.
Exactly. China's national sword policy in 2017. They basically put their foot down and said, we're not taking your contaminated waste anymore. Major restrictions on imports.
And the impact.
It sent shockwaves through the global recycling system. Suddenly, cities in the U.S., Europe, Australia, they had mountains of plastic piling up with nowhere to send it.
It exposed the whole system's fragility.
Totally. It forced everyone to confront the real cost and difficulty of dealing with their own waste rather than just shipping it away, which, as the authors point out, doesn't really exist on a finite planet.
Right. There is no away. So if shipping it away isn't the answer and the downstream processing is flawed, where does the failure actually begin? You said design.
Yes, back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
The authors talk about the tyranny of product design. Things are often designed for cheap manufacturing and shelf appeal, not for durability or end of life. Think planned obsolescence.
Or those products made of impossible to separate materials.
Precisely. They call them monstrous hybrids.
Monstrous hybrids. I like that.
Yeah. Things like those layered pouches for soup or snacks, plastic views with foil, maybe paper. Looks convenient, lightweight. But from a recycling perspective, a nightmare. Impossible to separate economically.
So designed for the dump, essentially.
Pretty much guarantees it. And this leads us right back to the consumer, standing by the bin holding this weird pouch and thinking, maybe?
Ah, the dreaded wish cycling. I confess I do this. You sort of hope for the best, right? Toss it in and cross your fingers.
We all do.
Yeah.
Comes from a good place, wanting to recycle more. But wish cycling is actually really harmful.
How so?
That one questionable item, the greasy box, the wrong plastic, the pouch, can contaminate an entire batch of otherwise clean, valuable recyclables.
So my hopeful toss might mean the whole truckload ends up in landfill.
It absolutely can happen. It makes the sorting process harder, more expensive, and often renders the material unusable. And the authors connect this behavior partly to confusing rules that vary from place to place and sometimes misleading labels from companies.
It feels like the responsibility and the cost has been cleverly shifted.
That's a key point. Recycling systems have effectively shifted the burden. Producers design these complex, hard-to-recycle products, and then we, the consumers, do the unpaid sorting labor, and our municipalities, funded by our taxes, pay for the often failing collection and processing systems.
The producer creates the problem. We pay to try and clean it up.
That's the economic reality they expose. But it's not all doom and gloom. They do highlight examples where the system works better because the incentives are different.
Okay, good. We need some solutions here. Like what?
Germany's fan system is a classic. The deposit return scheme for beverage containers.
Right. You pay a little extra. You get it back when you return the bottle or can.
And because people want their deposit back, they return the items, usually clean. The result? Over 98% collection rates for those containers.
Wow, 98%.
Yeah. And crucially, it creates a really clean, high-quality stream of material glass, plastic, aluminum that can be turned back into high-quality products. True closed-loop recycling becomes feasible.
Because the input quality is guaranteed.
Exactly. And then there are corporate examples, like Interface Carpet.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about them. They don't sell carpet, they lease it.
Right, their carpet is a service model. They install carpet tiles, maintain them, and when they're worn out, Interface takes them back because they still own them.
So Interface is responsible for the end of life.
Which completely changes their design incentives. Suddenly, it's in their financial interest to make tiles that are durable, easy to repair, easy to disassemble, and made from materials they can actually recover and reuse in new tiles.
It aligns profitability with sustainability, not disposability.
That's the key. It flips the script. And on a community level, you have places like Komakatsu in Japan.
The zero waste town.
Yeah, aiming for zero waste, sorting everything into like 45 different categories. It shows what's possible when resource stewardship becomes a deeply embedded local value in practice.
Okay, so pulling these threads together, the technical issues, the psychology, the potential solutions, what are the big overarching messages we should really take away from this?
I think the first one is definitely recognizing the cultural illusion. Recycling has become this powerful
The
ritual.
guilt disposal bin idea.
Right. It lets us consume with conscience. But the authors issue a stark warning here. This kind of consciousness without actual consumption reduction. That might be the greatest environmental tragedy of our time.
Oof, that's heavy. Okay, what's theme number two?
It's that core idea. Waste is a design flaw. It's not inevitable. It's a sign of a broken relationship between design and the material world.
So the focus has to shift upstream, prevention over cleanup.
Absolutely. Which leads to the third theme, the citizen over the consumer.
Meaning.
Meaning our most powerful role isn't just choosing slightly greener products as a conscious consumer, it's acting as an empowered citizen, demanding systemic change, policy change, better design mandates.
Getting involved at a structural level, not just an individual bin level.
Exactly. And that ties into the fourth theme, the primacy of the upper Rs.
Refuse, reduce, reuse, repair.
Yes. True sustainability isn't about building fancier recycling plants. It's about creating a world where we need to recycle as little as possible because we're preventing waste in the first place. Recycling is basically a measure of our failure higher up the chain.
These themes are really hammered home by some memorable lines in the material, aren't
Oh,
they?
definitely. Some really potent phrases that stick with you.
Let's revisit a couple. That guilt disposal bin one is powerful. The blue bin is not a recycling bin, it is a guilt disposal bin. It is the box we put our environmental anxieties into, allowing us to continue consuming without question.
It really captures that psychological function, doesn't it? The way it lets us off the hook.
And then there's the one about waste as a signal.
Right. Waste is not a substance. It is a signal of a system that has forgotten that on a finite planet, there is no way.
That hits hard. It connects our bin to the bigger picture, the global consequences, the fact that stuff doesn't just vanish.
It emphasizes that system's thinking. And finally, there's the call to action, the reframing of the fundamental question we should ask.
Instead of, can this be recycled?
Yes. They say that's the wrong question. The right questions are, does this need to exist in the first place? How long is it designed to last? And crucially, who is responsible for it when I am done with it?
Wow. Asking those questions before you even buy something, that changes everything. It's like pre-cycling, thinking about the end at the beginning.
That's exactly the shift, moving from a passive consumer dealing with disposal to an active citizen scrutinizing the entire life cycle.
So let's make this practical. For someone listening right now feeling maybe a bit overwhelmed or disillusioned, what are the concrete takeaways? What can we actually do?
Okay, first, embrace those upper Rs with passion. Refuse unnecessary stuff. Reduce consumption overall. Reuse and repair whenever possible. That's where the biggest impact lies, way more than recycling.
And for the stuff we do need to recycle.
Be a recycling master, not a wish cycler.
Meaning.
Learn your specific local rules. They vary widely. And prioritize quality over quantity. Clean items, no contaminants. If you're genuinely unsure about something, it's often better to put it in the trash.
Really? Throw it out.
Yes, sacrificing that one questionable item can save the rest of the batch from being contaminated and landfilled. Quality input is key.
Okay, that's individual action. What about that systemic change acting as citizens?
The single most powerful policy tool to advocate for is Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR.
EPR, what does that mean practically?
It means laws that legally shift the responsibility, both financial and physical, for managing a product at its end of life, away from taxpayers and municipalities, and back onto the producer.
So the company that makes the monstrous hybrid pouch has to figure out and pay for how to collect and deal with it.
Exactly. Suddenly they have a massive financial incentive to design products that are durable, reusable, easily recyclable, or made from materials they can actually recover. It internalizes the cost of bad design.
It forces them to think about the end of life right from the start.
Precisely. It aligns their profit motive with genuine sustainability goals.
You know, what struck me most pulling all this together was that cultural piece, how recycling became this almost untouchable symbol of environmental virtue, and how that might have inadvertently served economic interests by making us feel like we were doing enough, letting the bigger issues of production and consumption slide.
Yeah, the complex interplay. For me, the lasting insight is that this isn't primarily a technological problem. We can recycle lots of things, technically.
Right.
The real bottleneck is political and economic will. It's about challenging the linear take-make-dispose model and embracing circularity through new business models like leasing, yes, but also through fundamental redesign for durability and reuse.
So the real empowerment comes not just from sorting our bins better, but from changing our mindset.
Absolutely. Moving beyond being just a conscious consumer trying to pick the least bad option
Yeah.
to becoming an empowered citizen, demanding that the entire system works better, demanding that producers take responsibility, that's where the real leverage is.
A challenging but ultimately empowering message.
Definitely.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.